Good morning, honorable members of the National Council of Provinces. We also have members from provincial legislatures present. The Deputy Minister from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and officials from the department. And I'm not sure which other stakeholders might be present, but I'm sure we'll go through a process of introduction. My name is Shada Sheikh. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Security and Justice, the Select Committee. Right. Yeah, I think when you transition from provinces to national portfolio, Select, yeah, so we're still in that transitional mode. But once again, welcome. I think in terms of today's meeting, we will be addressed by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development on three bills. The first bill is the Traditional Courts Bill, which is the Section 76 piece of legislation. As a result, we had invited representatives from provincial legislatures to be present. In addition to that bill, we'll also be looking at the Child Justice Amendment Bill. And the third bill that we will look at is the Cyber Crimes Bill. I'm going to allow for members of the National Council of Provinces to introduce themselves. Thereafter, I'll request provinces to do so. I don't have an indication in terms of all the provinces. I know some are present. But we'll go through that round of introduction. And thereafter, I would hand over then to the Deputy Minister so that we also get a round of introduction from the department. I've introduced myself, so I'm going to hand over to Mayor Ncweta on my left.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Zukiswa Ncweta. I'm the member of the committee from Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Michalakis. I'm a permanent delegate from the Free State.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Karine Fisher. I'm a permanent delegate from the Northwest.
Molweni manene namanene kazi, Isaac Mbulelo Sileku, permanent delegate, Western Cape.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Phindile Mola, a permanent delegate from Mpumalanga Province and a member of this select committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Mohammed Dango. I'm a permanent delegate from Gauteng.
My name is Komesa Kenimutsama. I'm a permanent member of this delegate.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Sam Zandamela, permanent delegate from Mpumalanga.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Simon Fayela, a permanent delegate from KwaZulu-Natal.
My name is Placid Gwala, a visiting member from KwaZulu-Natal.
In fact, you're a special delegate. But I think we're done with members or permanent delegates. Let me put it that way. Are we not done?
Good morning. My name is Thabo Matiwane, special delegate from the Eastern Cape Provincial Legislature.
Good morning. I'm Winnie Ngwenya, a House Chair of International Relations, NSOP, permanent delegate of Gauteng. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Sandlana Smith. I'm a delegate from Free State. Thank you for receiving.
Are there any more members of provincial legislatures present? If you can please introduce yourself.
Good morning. My name is Aaron Motswana. I'm the chair for Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs in the Northwest. Thanks.
It is working. Good morning. I'm the member of provincial legislature, Amanda De Lange, from Gauteng.
thank you for that. And then maybe a special welcome also to the House Chair. Deputy Minister, perhaps you can introduce yourself and hand over to your chief. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm John Jeffrey, Deputy Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development. I'm accompanied by three officials from the department, one for each bill. We would have liked to have brought more, but because of budgetary constraints, kept the delegations down. Next to me is Ms. Teresa Ross. She will be presenting on the traditional courts bill. Next to her is Mr. Cyril Robertson, who will be presenting on the cybercrime bill. And then lastly, Ms. Tandazile Skosana, who will be presenting on the child justice bill.
Okay, thank you for that. I would imagine everybody else come from certain stakeholders as well as from the PNG. But I think I'm going to, before I hand over, I think, to the Department of Justice, I think I just want to make it clear that in today's briefing, we will be getting a briefing on the bill. And the reason we also wanted this briefing is because these three pieces of legislation were dealt with in the NCOP in the fifth term. We requested the department to come and brief us as a committee on the bill so that as members of this select committee, we become more familiar with the content of the bill, and as soon as our processes kick in, we will then take these processes forward. We invited members of the provincial legislatures because I think once we are ready to process the bill, it would make it easier for us to come to provinces and assist with the transitioning of that process. The first bill, being a Section 76 bill, is of particular importance to provinces. So after the presentation, I'm going to suggest that we take a slight break so that if provinces feel that they need to leave, they welcome to do so. But you're also welcome to sit in for the rest of the presentation. Okay. I think I'm going to then, before I hand over, I should also just indicate that we do have two apologies from our permanent delegates who are not present. It's Honourable Mtetwa from KZN and Honourable Dodovu from the Northwest. But also maybe just to put it on record so that I know some of you don't know me, but I'm from Limpopo. Deputy Minister, let me hand over to you.
Thanks very much. I assume most people are here for the traditional courts bill, which is, as you said, a Section 76 bill, so it requires provincial mandates, so provincial legislatures to discuss the bill, have hearings. We'll have hearings, first of all, discuss the bill, come with negotiating mandates, etc. I just wanted to start by giving some background to the process. Then Ms. Ross will take you through the slide presentation. This is an extremely controversial bill. In terms of and it relates to the issue, obviously, of the role of traditional leaders in South Africa, in democratic South Africa. As you would know, traditional courts exist in many parts of the country. We're given some recognition by the interim constitution, some recognition by the final constitution. The South African Law Reform Commission was asked to investigate legislation. Oh, and sorry, just before that, but the Black Administration Act, which had earlier names, has been repealed except for the sections empowering traditional courts. In the beginning, there were time limits to how long those sections would remain in force, but because Parliament couldn't come up with legislation, agree on legislation, I think the last amendment was that those sections remain in place until this law is passed. The Law Reform South African Law Reform Commission were tasked with researching and coming up with a law on traditional courts, which they did in the early 2000s. A bill was introduced into Parliament, into the National Assembly, and I think it was 2008 in the National Assembly. Public hearings were held, but then the elections came for the 2009 elections. After that, the bill didn't go through the National Assembly, but was sent straight was introduced in the National Council of Provinces. That was in about 2012. And the NCOP processed the bill, had provincial hearings, but the bill effectively got stuck. I think I've seen it in your researcher's report. There were, I think, four provinces in favor of the bill, four against, and one abstaining, and you need five provinces to support a Section 76 bill. So it effectively lapsed. In the last administration, the former minister, Michael Masuta, and myself then embarked on a new process. And we started by convening a meeting with traditional leaders, with the national and provincial houses. We then had a meeting with civil society organizations, and then we, it was over 2 days, and then we had a meeting with both traditional leaders and civil society. There was agreement that we needed a bill on traditional courts, and there was agreement that a reference group would be established comprising of traditional leaders and civil society organizations to work with the department. The National House was asked to send representatives to that reference group, which they did, as well as Controlesa. Civil society organizations, we approached people because to have a mandating process would not really have worked. And we worked with them for about a year and a half, I think. The aim was to come up with a bill, not that everybody liked, but that people could live with. And I think we finally did that process, and that was the bill that was then introduced in 2017. You'll see it's Bill 1 of 2017, so it was introduced early in 2017 into the National Assembly. So that's really the background of where this bill came from. Some of the controversial issues are around the question of whether people should have the opportunity to opt out of a traditional court if they're being brought there. And the bill that came from the reference group had that provision. You couldn't just not pitch. You had to give the registrar of the traditional court or the secretary of the traditional court, you had to notify them. You didn't have to give reasons. That aspect, as you would have, I think, seen, you had a briefing yesterday from the researchers, was changed by the Portfolio Committee to remove that, the National Assembly Portfolio Committee. Another controversial area was initially the bill did not provide for appeals outside the traditional system. In the past and currently in certain provinces, appeals are to the magistrates' court. So I think in particular in the former Transvaal, so that would be Limpopo, Mpumalanga, in particular, appeals would be to the magistrates' court. I'm not aware of that really happening anymore in KZN or the Eastern Cape. In the Northwest, Bophuthatswana had its own legislation on traditional courts, and appeals were to be sent to a panel with some persons nominated by the president of Bophuthatswana, who's now replaced by the premier of the Northwest and the chief magistrate of the Northwest. But the bill that was introduced did not provide for appeals
to the magistrate's court. The appeals were within the traditional system. The reason for that was that a view that traditional courts should not be inferior to magistrate's courts. However, there was provision for review, but it's only review to the High Court. And obviously, but High Courts are expensive. So when the bill was passed by the National Assembly, there was agreement from the Portfolio Committee, from the traditional leaders as well, to provide for appeals to the Magistrates Court. And that's one of the issues that's now in the bill. So I think that's really the background. Ms. Ross can then take you through the slide presentation. Chair, I know you've had a briefing yesterday, so I'm not sure how much you've already covered from the researchers, but she's prepared to go through the bill effectively clause by clause, but broadly, not on a slide presentation.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. I think she should go into as much detail as she can. The presentation that was done yesterday was just for select committee members, so it was an internal process. There are members from provinces present as well, so we would want much more extensive.
All right. And maybe just to say the bill was passed by the National Assembly in the fifth parliament, came here, but was not worked on. It's a 76 bill, so it requires intensive work from yourselves, which would include public hearings in each of the nine provinces as in terms of the constitutional requirements for public input.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the main objective of the traditional courts bill is to create a uniform legislative framework to regulate the role and functions of traditional leaders, or rather of traditional courts, when resolving disputes. I'll be referring to disputes and not cases or, you know, the terminology that applies to the retributive system, because traditional justice system is understood to be, you know, placing an emphasis on restorative justice system, which places an emphasis on mediation. So hence the bill refers to cases in that sense as disputes and not as offenses or crimes, and also because it is also understood that at customary law, there are no customary law specific offenses. So there is no distinction between what you could call criminal or civil cases, and hence the use of the word disputes. The bill, because as the Deputy Minister has indicated, traditional courts exist, and they continue to operate even as we're sitting here. There have been allegations of abuses in the system, and that has created a necessity to align the application or the operation of traditional courts with the constitutional imperatives. Therefore, the bill is intended also to improve access to justice services by enhancing the effectiveness, efficiency, and integrity of traditional courts and when resolving disputes. That is envisaged to, you know, promote social cohesion, coexistence, and peace and harmony to prevail in our traditional communities. Also, the bill is envisaged to
that it will contribute to the one of the national development plan targets of creating a developmental state that treats its citizens with dignity and also promoting social cohesion and supporting the role of women as leaders in the society. The Deputy Minister has mentioned the application of the some provisions which of the Black Administration Act, the repealed Black Administration Act, which is sections 12 and 20. This also makes a case for this type of legislation because the Black Administration Act, and in particular that says sections 12 and 20, are seen not to be in sync with the constitutional imperative. The other important reason why the traditional courts bill is important is because, you know, the uniformity of the legislative framework is because different provinces throughout the country use different pieces of legislation because of the erstwhile homeland system and those independent states which were created under the apartheid regime. Now it is therefore necessary that there is uniformity in the running of traditional courts throughout the country. It is also important to take into consideration that the bill does not in any way intend to change customary law, but, you know, like I mentioned, necessary to align it with the constitutional imperative. I've mentioned that traditional courts continue to exist, and this finds its the reason for its application in Chapter 12 of the Constitution, which recognizes the institution and the role of traditional leadership according to customary law, but subject to the Constitution. Okay, coming to slide 3, the Deputy Minister has already mentioned, you know, this brief history on the bill, the 2008 bill, about the 2008 bill and the 2012 bill. Okay, now coming to the guiding principles of the bill as contained in clause 3 of the bill. The guiding principles aim to set a scene and guide the implementers of the legislation or the users of the bill once it has been once it has become legislation of what to be mindful of when running and operating the traditional courts. And of importance there in the guiding principles is for the traditional courts to be mindful of the right to dignity, the achievement of equality, the promotion of non-racialism and non-sexism, freedom of sexual orientation, and identity. I've already indicated that the bill emphasizes the restorative justice system through mediation. The bill also indicates that when applying the legislation or dealing with the the disputes. The courts must be mindful of the existence of systemic unfair discrimination and inequalities or attitudes which are inherent or which are inherent in the system and are seen to be in conflict with the Constitution, and which then have the propensity of excluding meaningful participation in court proceedings by any person or any group of persons, particularly with regard to gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, language, religion, marital status, and on other grounds, such as race, because, you know, for example, the sections 12 and 20 of the Black Administration Act, which is still applicable in some parts of the country, the language used there makes it a point that it is only, you know, those courts should only deal with cases between blacks and blacks, and which, you know, clearly is not in sync with the new constitutional dispensation. Okay, and when instituting proceedings in the traditional courts, it is important to note that the proceedings in a traditional court may only be instituted if, or may not be instituted in a traditional court if a dispute is being dealt with at another level, or, you know, it can be a level at the traditional justice system, or at another, or is pending before another court, or is being investigated by the police, or has already been dealt with by another fora or court. And the court may only deal with matters as stated in Schedule 2 of the bill. And those matters are, you know, matters as such as theft, which would be, you know, like minor disputes such as theft, malicious damage to property, assault where grievous bodily harm has not been inflicted, receiving stolen property, criminal injuria, and all those matters that the court may deal with are stated in Schedule 2 to the bill. Okay, I've made and explained why we refer to the cases before the traditional court as disputes, which is in, yeah. Can we then move on to the next slide, dealing with the composition of the traditional court as well as participation in this course. The bill provides that the traditional courts must be constituted of men and women in accordance with promoting the right to equality as, you know, enshrined in Section 9 of the Constitution. The bill further provides that these courts are presided over by a traditional leader, or a traditional leader may designate a person who will then preside over the court. And the courts are required to promote the and protect the representation and participation of women in these courts, both as members of the courts as well as when women are practiced before the courts. So the court must the court must promote that and be seen to be promoting and protecting that. And in furtherance to that, to ensure the that this provision is implemented, the minister, which will be the Minister of Justice, as well as the Commissioner for Gender Equality, must put measures in place to promote gender equality in this court and must report annually to Parliament on this issue of the representation and protection of the rights of women in this court. The bill further provides in clause 5 that before the traditional court can commence with its proceedings or its business, the traditional leader or a person designated by the traditional leader to preside over the court must say a pledge. And the pledge must be to the effect that the person presiding will protect and promote the values enshrined in the Constitution. And this would be, you know, particularly in relation to Clause 9 of the Constitution, where, you know, equality is provided for. The bill provides for the appointment of clerks of the court, clerks of the court will be appointed by, in terms of the public service laws regulating appointments. The role of the clerk of the court is very focal in this court, as this there will be the depository for information regarding the operation of this court. And their functions will include, amongst others, issuing summons to parties to attend court, keeping attendance registers of the sessions of the traditional court, keeping records of proceedings, filing decisions of the traditional courts with the provincial registrar, transferring cases to and from the traditional courts and to other fora or to the courts, and submitting the prescribed reports as would be required to the provincial registrar. The clause 6 of the bill deals with the nature of traditional courts, and the bill provides that the traditional courts are courts of law with the specific purpose of promoting the equitable and fair resolution of disputes in a manner that is underpinned by the value system applicable in customary law and custom, and function in terms of the Constitution. And hence, I mentioned at the beginning that the bill does not in any way intend to change customary law. And once more, the main role of this court is to prevent conflict, maintain harmony in communities, and resolving disputes in a manner that promotes restorative justice, social cohesion, and reconciliation in the communities. The bill also provides for different levels of dispute resolution at the traditional court, and the bill mentions the court of the headwoman or the headman, the senior traditional leader's court, or the king or queen's court where that is applicable. It is known that at customary law, you know, or that this may not be necessarily the levels of dispute resolution at in customary law. There may be other levels such as your wards and the family level court. But the bill does not preclude persons from starting the dispute resolution at any level. Only that the bill starts or mentions these specific purposes without necessarily precluding persons from starting at any level that may be recognized at customary law. Coming to clause 7 of the bill, which provides for the procedure as it is applicable at or in this clause, this clause also emphasizes and reinforces the guiding principles that I mentioned in the beginning, and they build into the bill the safeguards for the protection and for the protection of vulnerable groups such as women as litigants of the court, as well as members of the court, the protection of the elderly, children and the youth, the indigent, persons with disabilities, and persons who are subject to discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, or what you could refer as your LGBTI community. And these safeguards, as built into the bill, require that all court proceedings must be held or must be open to all members of the community at a place that is accessible to all members of the community. And the proceedings must be conducted in the presence of both parties, with both parties being able to participate fully in the proceedings, affecting them without discrimination on any prohibited ground, as mentioned in Section 9 of the Constitution. The bill does not permit legal representation in traditional courts. However, provision is made in the bill for a person to be allowed to be assisted by any person of their choice, you know, with whom they will be comfortable and have confidence in. Yes, the court must be held in the open, which means it must be held at the time and place which is accessible to all members of the community. And the proceedings included the notice and the manner of preserving the dignity of the court, as well as the manner of executing any order made by the court, must be in accordance with customary law and custom, and which may differ from place to place. As we know that, you know, because of the diversity and that is inherent in the cultural, in customary law as throughout the country. The proceedings must also be conducted in the language that's mostly spoken or used in the area of the court. There may be fees that are payable in the traditional court in terms of customary law, and that will need to be determined by the minister by notice in the Gazette. The Clause 8 provides for the orders that a traditional court may make. And it will be realized that these orders are more on the side of restorative justice, and they, you know, also address the concerns that were raised in the past that the orders could be open to abuse. Now, this bill, in addressing those concerns that were raised in the past, does not provide for the any imposition of fines, although I mentioned earlier that the court, there may be fees that may be payable to the court, but that is not the fines per se, but just fees to the court. And it's because the system places an emphasis on restorative justice system. The orders such as compensation and redress, which are aimed at restoring the relations between parties and promoting social cohesion in the community. The compensation that may be ordered by the court may not exceed the value of the damage that gave rise to the dispute or the amount that the minister may determine from time to time, whichever is lesser of the two. Fines may not be imposed, and any community service that the court may order may not be for the benefit of the traditional leader or any member of the court or any relation of the community or of the traditional leader. It must be for the benefit of the community in question. The bill also makes provision for a mechanism for ensuring that orders of the traditional court are complied with. In order to ensure that these courts are not brought into disrepute and for litigants not to feel aggrieved that despite the court having said, the orders are still ignored. And if a party fails to comply with an order of the court, the aggrieved party may approach the clerk of the court, who will then mediate the between the parties for compliance with the order of the court. And if that mediation still fails, then the clerk of the court must then refer the matter to the justice of the peace, who is appointed in terms of the justice of the peace and commissioner of Oaths Act of 1963. And then the justice of the peace will then deal with the matter in terms of the powers as given to him or her in terms of the legislation, the justices of the peace legislation that I've just referred to. The bill provides for the appointment or provides for a role of provincial traditional court registrars. And also sets out what the role and the responsibilities of these functionaries will be. Their function will, among others, include compiling and maintaining a prescribed register of all traditional courts in a particular province, refer cases of public interest to the High Court, in order to build jurisprudence and enhance the reform of customary law, transfer cases in respect of which traditional courts do not have a jurisdiction to the appropriate court, and assisting parties and guiding them in the, and as well as supervising the functions of the traditional courts. So this provincial registrar will be a focal person in ensuring the effective implementation of this legislation, or the, this envisaged legislation. The qualifications as well as the experience of the registrars will be provided for in the regulations to the bill. Provision is made in the bill for a review on procedural shortcomings, and that can be in relation to a matter in respect of which the court did not, the traditional court when dealing with the dispute, add in terms of the procedure, and such as where the traditional court before or the traditional leader or a person designated did not take make the pledge at, before commencing with the case, or where a person was not allowed to represent themselves. And there is a whole list of instances where a matter can be referred on review. Then the High Court, in dealing with the review, can either confirm, alter, set aside, correct, or correct the order made by the traditional court, or set aside or correct the proceedings of the traditional court, or make an order that the traditional court ought to have made in the beginning. And it is envisaged that these reviews will contribute to jurisprudence building as well as creating precedents in matters of customary law. Clause 12 is of particular importance. The Deputy Minister mentioned that this provision was not necessarily in the bill as it was introduced, but was put in at the portfolio committee stage. And this provision takes the place for the opting out or in clause that was initially in the bill but was removed in the portfolio committee stage. And clause 12 allows for the referral of matters to the magistrates' courts having jurisdiction if a party is aggrieved by a decision or order of a traditional court. However, this referral can only be done after the party in question has exhausted all traditional court system appeal procedures as are applicable within the system itself. And when this referral is made, then the magistrate's court can hear evidence and give any order or decision on the matter it deems competent to give in the matter. I've mentioned that this clause replaces the opting out clause as it was in the bill as introduced. Clause 13 deals with the records that will need to be kept on traditional courts, and the clerk of the traditional court will be a focal point in this, and it provides that records must be kept of the date on which the dispute was dealt with, the nature of the dispute, the summary of the dispute, the particulars of the parties as well as their witnesses, the decision and the order of the court, and an indication that the traditional leader presiding or the person designated by the traditional leader to preside had in fact taken the pledge as required by the bill. The bill in clause 14 provides that disputes can be transferred from the traditional court to the magistrate court or even to the small claims court and the other way around, which means that a matter can also be transferred from the magistrate court to the traditional court when the magistrate court is of the opinion that such a transfer is called for. The bill provides for limitation of liability for members of the traditional court in respect of anything done or not done by them, provided that was done in good faith. And then in clause 16, a code of conduct and the enforcement thereof is provided for. And the bill provides that the minister, in consultation with the minister responsible for traditional affairs, as well as the National House of Traditional Leaders, must compile a code of good conduct for all persons who have a role to play in the traditional courts for the effective functioning of this court. And that would include persons who facilitate sessions in this court on behalf of traditional leaders, as well as the clerks of the court and persons who are interpreters in this court where that is needed, because the language that I've already mentioned, that the language that would be used in this court is a language that is predominantly spoken in the area of jurisdiction of the court. And the code of conduct must be a guide to the implementers of this legislation. Any breach thereof of the code must be reported and investigated by the provincial House of Traditional Leaders, and there are sanctions that go with the breach to the code, and that includes making an apology or a person being reprimanded, being given a written warning, the person being ordered to pay compensation, or even subjecting a person who breached the code to counseling or relieving the person of the role in the traditional court for the duration while this a person is being rehabilitated. Regulations would be necessary for the operation of the of this bill. And the bill provides for the minister to make regulations regarding the role and responsibilities of clerks of the court, the pledge to be taken before proceedings commence, the qualifications and experience of a provincial registrar, the training of traditional leaders and persons designated by the traditional leader to preside over traditional courts, the manner of taking matters on review, and as well as the involvement and training of paralegals and interns in the functioning of traditional courts. The Deputy Minister touched on the consultation process that was followed in the development of this bill. And coming to the financial implications that will be attached to the bill. The bill was costed by the costing unit in the department, and because of the current economic constraints that prevail, it was accepted that the existing resources will need to be used in the implementation of this legislation. The main financial implications will be in the form of the appointment of personnel, training, and the acquiring the goods and services. It is, you know, accepted that for accommodation, this personnel would be accommodated in the regional offices of the department throughout the country or where traditional courts exist. And the projections relating to such financial implications, approximately 11 million per annum if, say, new personnel is to be appointed for the implementation of the bill. Thank you.
Okay, maybe to finish, I know you're pushed for time. Just to reemphasize that this bill does not purport to create traditional courts. It purports to regulate, so it's not trying to reinvent the wheel. It's trying to regulate existing courts, which differ from traditional area to traditional area, and to regulate them in line with the Constitution.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and Mayor Teresa, for that. It was quite an in-depth presentation. No, I did, and I'm hoping that our members from provinces as well found that quite useful. But I know we are pressed for time because we intend finishing three pieces of legislation. But I'm going to open it up for questions of clarity from members, all members. I've noted Honorable Mikalakis. Oh, and okay, there's Honorable Goya had joined us. He didn't introduce himself, but he's also a member of the Select Committee, and he's from the Northern Cape, a permanent member. Honorable member from KZN. Okay, so Honorable Mikalakis, Honorable member from KZN, Honorable Goya, and Honorable member, you remind me which province? Malema from Gauteng. Thank you, sir. Okay, an honorable member from the Northern Cape at the end. Eastern Cape. Sorry. Does everybody want to speak? I can go in this order. Okay, let me do that. If you've raised your hand, I'll go in this order so it just makes my life easy. Thank you. Honorable Mikalaki.
Thank you, Chair. My question is a fairly simple one. If I look at Schedule 2, the first six matters which traditional courts are competent to deal with in terms of the Act are all criminal of nature. It's petty crimes, stealing 15,000 rand here, criminal injuria, assault, and so on. But then when you look at the orders that may be made by traditional courts, it says in Section 8 that the traditional court may make any of the following orders. And then under J, it says, an order directing that the matter be submitted to the National Prosecuting Authority for a possible institution of criminal proceedings. I just want to know, should that may not be a must? If there is some form of a crime that constitutes one of these crimes that are referred to, the first six in Schedule 2, isn't there an onus still on the traditional court to still refer it to the prosecuting authority? And if that is so, should under that section the word may not perhaps be must for the purposes of 8.1J? Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Deputy Minister, I'm going to just take a few questions if I get
you. Just for time that you take all the questions,
okay,
and then we respond.
The next member was Honorable Malema.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and my apologies for being delayed to this meeting. The first question is in relation to the enforcement as to what would be the role of the police in regard to the enforcement of the orders by the traditional courts. That's the first question. So the second question is just a follow-up to what has just been said by the Honorable Deputy Minister here, that if for all the intents and purposes the intention is to try and regulate, does that imply to mean that there was no regulations prior to this proposed bill before us here? And the last thing is that the last question is in relation to the options that the litigants would have, that they can opt to, they can opt out from the traditional court by just merely notifying. It was existing before that element of notification. I just need to check as to what is the rationale behind removing such a clause. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Member from KZN, could you please also remind me of your name?
No, my name is Blessed Kwala.
Blessed Kwala. Thank you.
Deputy Minister is my former colleague in the province. No, mine is just a comment. Firstly, is to appreciate the work done by the by those who are actually crafting the bill itself, and also the minister's contribution before we start, so that we are able.
Honourable Member, could you use the mic, please? Is it working, I hope? It is working.
Yeah, but it's not burning. And also to thank the Deputy Minister for the explanation before, because as he has indicated that it is a controversial bill, and I can also add that it is also sensitive and complex. Why I'm saying that it is complex is because at times some believe that there was something wrong with the traditional way of dealing with cases, but it wasn't. And also we cannot take people such like, as we talk about magistrates. In fact, the magistrates are the ones who actually neutralized everything, because the amakosi that we have today is not, some are original, some were actually put into place by the magistrate themselves in the 80s when this Inkatholo came into being. And I must also add on clause 7 that in my belief, traditional courts are more democratic than the courts, the courts that we have in South Africa. Why? Because prosecutors, all the people in the village who attended the court proceedings, has a right to interrogate, ask questions, make inputs before inquiry, and the team that is in Duna takes a decision. So we want also to understand that at the end, when we pass this into law, that it incorporates all this. It must not neutralize on one end, while we believe that we are aim, as you have said, that we are not aimed to change the traditional laws, but it must also not neutralize it at the same time. The last comment is with regard to the capacity. I've read it quickly, but a capacity, usually there is a budget for the magistrate as we speak, but traditional laws, there is nothing. We expect amakhosi to run this from their own pockets, because there is nothing as we speak. So it must reflect that, I mean, the capacity, because when you talk about the amount of approximately 11 million per annum will be needed for new personnel. Why new personnel? Because there are some people that are there already. So they mustn't be undermined at the same time. That is my comment that I can make, because we are still continuing and we'll debate it even at a level on the province. But I'm happy that AMACOS has been consulted and are still going to be consulted at, in the provinces, so that when we come at the end, then we are all happy with the bill itself. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Gwala. Honorable Matsunai, you want to come in?
Nna ke batla go tseba gore dikgotlatshekelo tse tsa setho a le bone ba tla patalwa yaka go patalwa di-magistrate.
That was clear. Honorable Goya. I think when the minister responds, he will respond to that one as well. You didn't get it as well. Okay. Honorable Zandamela, do you want to assist us? Just so that we don't lose the translation. Please.
No, he was basically saying
the magistrate.
Induna is going to get what the judges are getting, medical aid, you know, allowances.
Conditions of service.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Honorable Goya.
Thank you very much, and let me start with an apology as well, which I think was tabled, but I think it's proper that I also apologize for joining the meeting late. I just want to check, because we're talking about traditional courts here, and traditional communities, many traditional communities, are patriarchal in nature, and that is an accepted norm. You will find out that many of those courts are consisting of men. Now, this prescription that there must be men and women, what if the women in that community are comfortable with the current arrangement? Are we going to force it to change? That's the one thing. The second one would be, where do we locate the traditional courts in the criminal justice system? Can your local court, for example, overrule a decision of a traditional court because they feel that justice was not done? So I want to check where do we locate that, and the issues of, for example, if you are charged in a criminal court, you have a criminal record, you are charged by a traditional court, you are fined to pay a goat or a cow, and where does that locate you? Does that mean a criminal record? That's what I wanted to check. The other one would be the issue that is made mandatory to conduct proceedings in a language that is mostly used in an area. We know that our country has become so diverse that you find in the deepest of the rural areas, you find people who speak another language. In the past, it would be an acceptable norm that if you say Hlulhuwe, you speak Zulu and you can't speak Sotho. But you will find Basutus there now. Are we saying we will judge them in a language that they don't understand because they are not staying in that area? Because it does not provide for interpretation services in the event. It can be conducted in that language, but there should be an addition that in the event a person does not understand the language, interpretation services should be provided. And the justice of the peace, the referral of an unresolved dispute to the justice of the peace, is that the final arbitration point? What if the appointed justice of the peace is unable also to enforce the implementation of the decision? Where does the matter go to? Because it just ends there to say the justice of the peace will resolve the matter in a manner he sees or she sees fit to do so. So that's then the last thing would be around the consultation. I see the consultation was more representative. Are we saying that's the final point? Are we not going down in the form of your public hearings so that we can be able to ensure that we consult as broadly as possible and make sure that this, what we are dealing with, at least finds resonance with the people? So that's what I wanted to raise. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matiwani.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me just first make a disclaimer that perhaps in the future there must be a demarcation that special delegates would have a seat here and permanent delegates would have a seat there, because I was unceremoniously removed from where I was sitting by Honorable Toya to come and sit where I'm sitting, and that was very uncomfortable.
We're actually all equal, and sometimes you lead our delegations.
And I find it very, very, very odd that I was removing my chair. Let me leave that, Chair. Chair, I think we must appreciate the submission by the department in the committee. But again, as a comment, to say that it would be comforting to get from the department that all the matters that would have been raised before, there would have been legal stress test this time around to address them, so that when we do consultations, we do not anticipate a plethora of issues to be raised against the bill this time around. So that comfort for me would be very important. The second issue is, coming from the Eastern Cape, you would imagine that some traditional courts previously would have had some matters which are considered to be at odds with the Constitution. For example, banishing, have an order to banish an individual in a traditional court. Now, can the department confirm that this, which is seen to be at odds with Section 21, Subsection 3 of the Constitution, will not find a space this time around? Because the Amakhosi would always say that we are banishing this person in an area of our traditional, you know, he must leave this place for good. And that is at odds with the Constitution. The Constitution, subsection 3 of 21, section 21, subsection 3, speaks about every person has a right to remain in the country. So can the department confirm that will be done away with? The last point, which I think is related to what Honorable Toya raised earlier on, the location of the traditional court versus your normal criminal court setup. We are now hearing from the bill now that there is no legal representation is not considered. But again, there is an insertion in the bill that talks about a reviewability of a decision taken by a traditional court. That is reviewable in court, in a higher court. Essentially meaning that a decision taken by a traditional court can now be reviewed in court. I do understand that that possibility on its own provides a conflict between the traditional court and your criminal justice system, as it were. And how do we address that? Because that is going to be a bone of contention. If a traditional court order that I must pay a goat on the basis of what I've done, and the higher court review that decision. So for me, we need to find a legal remedy to address this issue before before we do any other consultation. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor, from the honourable member from Gauteng, if I can get your name, honourable Belanga.
That's right. Thank you, ma'am. I think I agree very much. We are already understaffed in the judiciary systems as it is, and I would believe, if I'm correct, that the people that's going to deal with the traditional courts would also have to adhere to a certain standard of legal requirements educationally, if I'm correct. My concern is just that, as the gentleman before me just said, that if there was a decision made at the traditional court and the person's not happy with it and they take it to the normal courts, that it might be overrun. We might end up with a situation where we've got a typical Judge Judy kind of court issue. And I think most of you will understand that's ever watched that program. You know, it's more there sometimes for the laughs and for acting in front of a TV than anything else. One would not want the traditional courts to be set up, which is supposed to be in the rural areas, the furthest of the rural areas, as I understood it. Otherwise, what is the point if we have the traditional courts, but they still sit with the rest of the courts, just doing basically the same work, but just differently? It doesn't make sense to put that extra emphasis on the financial implications as well as the staff implications. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member? No? Okay, that's Honorable Lamy.
Motswana.
Okay.
From the Northwest.
Yeah, sorry, I just put you in the Gauteng group. My apologies.
No, thanks. I think the most of the points have been covered. The honourable member from the Eastern Cape has covered what I actually was my concern, that if we are to really not put emphasis on the issue of the enforcement, the process of consultation would be much more difficult, because then it would render this particular traditional courts processes toothless, because then for a simple reimbursement, a particular person would have many other options to consider, either to run back to the magistrate and so on and so on. So it would be appreciable if it can be given some sense of truth, so as to, it doesn't open up for a protracted processes of review. And if we are to then go back and say, due to financial constraints, we are unable to allocate more resources, why are we engaging in this process? Instead of us now, for once, our traditional leaders be given more recognition, because it would appear as if we still want to dilly-dally around issue of recognizing traditional leadership in every sense. Laws that we are saying, we are recognizing that they are existing in various parts of our country, whether you go to KwaZulu-Natal, whether you go to Limpopo and so on. And because of now, government is saying, due to financial constraints, we are unable to afford resources to respective traditional courts. I think somehow resources need to be given to them, so that you don't open up a processes where people are going to consider that if I am not in good relationship with a particular traditional leadership, in that I'm not going to respect whatever outcome that is of a matter that was dealt with within that particular traditional leadership. Thanks.
Thank you, honourable members. Honourable Deputy Minister, I think just from my side, I mean, clearly the bill has made a lot of strides in terms of addressing gender equity. But in terms of clause 7, when we say full and equal participation, are we actually referring to at least 50%? Thanks.
And then Ms. Ross can give more detail. But just to specify again, it's not creating, establishing, this bill is not establishing traditional courts. It's regulating them. They are already there. They are functioning. As far as the resources, they are functioning. So the idea was that it shouldn't be necessary to put in a large lot of resources. On the issue to Commissioner Motsumai, traditional leaders, that would be Amakosi. I only know the KZN terminology, not the generic. But Amakosi is in Duna, are paid. Okay, so it won't be anything more in addition to that. Then I think the other issue is that these are not criminal courts. They are what you would call generic courts, courts in terms of customary law. So if you look at Clause 6, nature of traditional courts, and this was quite a big issue for traditional leaders, traditional courts are courts of law, the purpose of which is to promote the equitable and fair resolution of certain disputes in a manner that's underpinned by the value system applicable in customary law and function in accordance with customary law subject to the Constitution. If you start getting into, look, previously traditional courts would be seen to be criminal courts, but if you start going into that, you run into problems with the relationship with the prosecuting authority who have the power to institute criminal proceedings on behalf of the state. So the idea is, look, they're neither criminal nor, well, they're not criminal, but they can deal with disputes that arose from criminal conduct as a way of dealing with that dispute. But they're not criminal per se, so they're not going to attract a criminal record or anything like that. But it wouldn't be, you know, if the people, the court cannot resolve the dispute, then if it's a criminal matter, they should say, no, this matter should be referred to the magistrate's court. So that's why, Honorable Michalakis, it's may, not must, because there may be a view of like, you know, you've got a rural village far from the nearest magistrate's court. People are aggrieved. Somebody beat up somebody else in the community. It wasn't assault GBH. If it's a serious assault, then that has to go to the criminal courts. But the traditional courts resolve it. And also remember that the traditional courts vary from area to area. So some would be the community. Some would be, I think, in the Northwest, I think you have a panel of people who are appointed to deal with traditional disputes. That's my understanding, whereas in other areas it would be, it's the community. The issue of gender, which was one of the issues which struck down the last version of the bill. And it is, I can't remember now who it was that had raised what happens where a traditional community, the women don't want to participate. And that's why this section is worded the way it is. And actually, generally in the reference group, there was consensus between traditional leaders and civil society. So it's not specifying that it must be 50%. It's referring to the equality clause in the Constitution, which is there. If you have a community court, a traditional court rather, that's comprised of the community, you can't say it must be 50% because the people that arrive for the matter, and I understand that the participation from the community would often depend on how interesting the issue is. And you can't say, no, we've got like 10 more women than men here. Those 10 women must go, or we've got 10 more men than women here, they must go. There's also the element of progressive realization in terms of this requirement on the Minister of Justice and the Commission for Gender Equality to report on an annual basis. So the idea basically is, look, patriarchy is not good, it is discriminatory. But it is there, it's very much a feature of traditional life in some areas. So rather look at empowering the participation of women rather than saying a blanket enforcement. Remember that the traditional leadership framework bill, I think it act, I think was had a gender requirement which was difficult to implement. So basically what is there is reference to the equality clause of the Constitution and then provisions relating to effectively progressive realization of the Constitution. On the issue of training, look, there's already provision in the South African Judicial Education Institute Act for representation. They do the training of judicial officers for them to do for representation from traditional leaders. So there is a representative from, I think, the National House or somebody deployed. But obviously, you know, you can have a well-learned person in statutory law, Roman Dutch law, whatever, who doesn't know anything about traditional law. And you can have a person who is not formally educated but who's very familiar with the traditional law of that area. So it's a bit of a different aspect. The issue of enforcement, look, because it's not criminal, the other option that was looked at was should the sheriffs of the court not be enforcing, because they actually play a role in enforcement. But it wasn't viable in terms of they are based near the towns, the towns. Who's going to pay them? They're not employed by the state. They work on a commission basis. And it's not, I didn't read the, I mean, Ms. Ross can maybe speak more of it, but on the enforcement, I didn't see the justices of the peace. So people would be appointed to enforce the orders, and then it's what happens under 9B if there's non-compliance. And what must that justice of the peace do? So it's not making them the mediator or anything. On the issue of reviews and appeals, look, anything is reviewable. So already, if you don't agree with a decision of a traditional court, you can take it on review. That's already there. The issue with representation, look, we've got another, well, it's to try and make, not overcomplicate the courts so that they can deal with issues and there can be a resolution in an area, in a community. We have already small claims courts where you are not allowed legal representation. It's the parties that represent themselves. The presiding officer plays more of a inquisitorial role, and you also can't appeal. And the reason that those two provisions are there is if you have lawyers, it's meant to be allowing people on smaller cases to resolve issues. And sometimes it will be a David versus a Goliath. But the Goliath has got money, so if you allow legal representation, the lawyers will come in and overcomplicate matters, and then they will appeal right up to the Constitutional Court if they don't agree with it. So you've got to, that's the sort of check and the balance issue. I'll hand over to Ms. Ross, but just the other point on the process from here. Look, this is controversial. We did get at some point consensus between traditional leaders and some people from civil society organizations that are active in this. I see that some civil society organizations are now calling for the president to stop this bill. Well, the president actually can't do anything. It's still with Parliament. It's with the NCOP. And the bottom line is those courts are there. They're existing. You're either going to abolish them, make them illegal, in which case people in many rural areas will not have access to justice and dispute resolution because the magistrates' courts are far, or you've got to regulate them in terms of the Constitution. And, oh, sorry, that was the other issue. Were they not regulated before? Look, there were regulations in terms of, I think, Black Administration Act, but since the new constitution, there has been no regulation. And there would obviously be customary law regulation, and customary law is really a form of common law. In other words, law recognized through practice. And I'm sure there will be legal disputes, and it probably would have to go to the Constitutional Court on the matter. But just to the whip of the committee, the intention then is that you as the NCOP have to take this out for public comment. It's in fact a legal requirement. It's a Section 76 bill, and Honorable Gwala would know from the Matatiel case, where the legislature in KZN did not take it out. Was it KZN or it was Doctors for Life, it was Gauteng. I think they promised a hearing and they didn't give it. Bill got struck down, had to be redone. So the intention would be that you will have public hearings and briefings in the province, and to the special delegates that are here, it's up to you to define how to do that. But we would like to try and get as much consensus on this bill as possible. As I said, we're not going to get a bill that everyone is happy with. We want a bill that generally people can live with, from traditional leaders to people living in rural communities under traditional authorities. But the idea would be, particularly to the provincial legislatures, that you will take this back and run a consultation process. And you will look, please, at how to improve the bill. Because, as I said, the other option, which everybody rejected in the beginning, between even with civil society, would be to abolish traditional courts. So I hope nobody is still talking about that. Can I just hand it to Ms. Ross quickly, please? Sorry.
Ms. Ross, are you able to wrap up in 2 minutes, please? Thanks.
On the question of the involvement of the police, it should be borne in mind that the bill places an emphasis on the restorative nature and the resolution of disputes that disturb the harmony in communities. So a consideration was taken not to dilute that, because the people who use, also there's this use of the system that's based on voluntarism. You use a system because you believe in it and you want to use it. So, with the involvement of the police there, don't have that, and the thinking was that we should preserve that restorative nature of the system. And on the regulations, although the Deputy Minister has touched on it, yes, we mentioned that sections 12 and 20, that was the regulation that exists now, and sections 12 and 20, which is found to be very distasteful in relation to our constitutional dispensation. And the other issue is the fragmentation that exists throughout the country. You find that in the northwest and the parts of the Free State, you find that the legislation of the former Bophuthatswana still applies in some areas, Eastern Cape and all that. Different pieces of legislation apply. So it is necessary to create this uniformity throughout the country, which is South Africa, and then not to have different pieces of legislation applying in different areas. Banishment. The previous two bills, 2008 and 2012 bill, provided for that. And in the quest to deal with all the issues that were bones of contention in that bill, every effort was made to address the issues that were sticking out there. And although the bill does not say, because the previous bill provided for it, but this bill does not. And this bill is very specific on the orders that the court may issue. And there's also the issue of training that will need to be provided to the implementers of the legislation, your traditional leaders and persons who are designated to preside over cases. The aggrieved, there was a question on the what was the motivation for the deletion of the opting out clause. I mentioned in the briefing that clause 12, in terms of which an aggrieved party can refer a matter to an order of the court, of the traditional court, or a decision to the magistrate court, is provided for, and that's in place of that opting out clause. The issue of the justice of the peace, Chair, the justice of the peace, the legislation exists, they exist, and because there was this issue of constrained economic circumstances, the idea was to use the resources that are already there, but perhaps that this is something that we could further look into in order to strengthen it, because, you know, like I said, the involvement of not involving the police and all that, and to preserve the restorative nature of this of this system was the main point here. Yala, if you find say last stop, because that was understood would be understood to be in terms of customary law, that clearly will not attract a criminal record, you know, again, because of the restorative nature thing. And that has been, something that was debated in the past, because it was said that the persons who took part in the consultations would say even the complainant, as well as the person, the perpetrator, they all take part in the whether the meat of the goat is eaten at the court and all that, but they all take part in that in order to forge that reconciliation. Reviews. The Deputy Minister has spoken about that, and that to be for where procedure is flouted. Banishment.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Yes. Okay, thank you, Deputy Minister and Ms. Teresa. And honourable members, thank you for your questions as well. I think we are now in an even better position to understand this law. But as has already been indicated, this is a Section 76 piece of legislation. There will still be further briefings on the bill when the time is right, and the processes will have to unfold, especially consultative processes on the bill. I think on that note, I'm going to suggest that, I'm going to allow a two-minute leg stretch so that we can then get into the next bill. I think the next bill will be the Child Justice Amendment Bill. That should be Child Justice Amendment.